You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, or really anything at all, whatever your question might be, bring it to the table, dial us up. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We'll wrap it all around that trucking lifestyle because everything we do is just a little different than the normal people. So if you've got a question, I'll get you an answer. Many times if I can't, somebody in the audience will help us out as well. Speaking of the not normal people, I've been on the road February. So coming up in 2 months, we'll probably be out on the road till almost July. We finished up the America Truck Show. Great show. We have the CMC coming up. Big event. Boy, you better be prepared. It is going to be an awesome week. I am working on some new material. I will be, I'm updating all of the stuff that I normally do. You know, we don't change that a lot from year to year. It is what it is, and it's good material. I update it a little bit every year, but there's no point running the wheel. And we're adding some new material. We have some new speakers this year. Just a lot like last year, just more of it. And we always refine things, make them a little better every year. That's our goal. I work by something called CANI, C-A-N, constant and never-ending improvement. And that giant leap at once. You improve things by improving them a little bit at a time, over time, and continuing to do that. You do that in all areas of your life. One of the things that, you know, I close almost every show with the saying, and part of it is do the hard work. It's been a while since I've explained that, and we get new listeners all the time. And I get emails or messages here and there, and where people saw me at the truck show and they'll ask, what does that mean? And most people assume it means to work hard. And it's absolutely not to work hard. Now, there's nothing wrong with working hard. And if you're going to be successful, you're going to have to put in work. There's no way around that. But there are lots of people, the world is good with people who work hard and aren't satisfied, successful, and they're not feeling fulfilled, and they're not achieving what they working hard is just a given. You have to work hard, but it's not enough. It's not even close to being enough. And it's what most people keep doing. They just keep working harder. And then at some point, a lot of people doing the hard is very different than working hard. Same words, little different order, but an entirely different meaning. Now, in the couple minutes I'm going to take here, I can't do this concept justice, but if you're looking for a book to listen to, and you should be looking for books to listen to, that's part of doing the hard work. This concept is from a book, and the book is titled The War. Now, I'll warn you, this book has nothing to do with trucking. To it, you're going to think that it has very little to do with business. It's written by an author, obviously, he wrote a book, but he writes a lot of books. He writes novels. If you're a movie buff, you might recognize the movie The Legend of Bagger Vance. That was actually written by Steven Pressfield. He's written many screenplays. People say, why would you recommend a book about writing to truck drivers? because there's such a great lesson in the book. And it really is all about doing the hard work and what happens when you start doing the hard work, and why most people, even if they head in that direction, many times quit and give up. He talks about something called the resistance, and the resistance is real. So let me explain real quick what the hard work means. It can be different things for different people, but it's not your normal everyday, this is what I have to go to work and do, this is what I have to do around the house. It's bigger, more important stuff. You know, let's apply it to an owner-operator's business. One of the things you can do as an owner-operator to do the hard work is to have a bookkeeping system. And it's amazing to me how few owner-operators actually have a system where they can look at their numbers and know how much money they made. That seems like a really basic thing, but that's what the hard work is all about. It's the basic things we know we should be doing, but we don't. They're not difficult-cated, but they're hard. They're hard. We put them off. It's not hard work. It's doing the hard work. It's not working hard. It's doing the stuff that most people don't do, but is critically important. It's listening to audiobooks or reading in your spare time. Now, you know, the good news is if you're a truck driver, you never have to crack open a physical book if you don't want to. You have 60 plus hours a week to listen. I am getting more reading, listening done now that I'm on the road. Now, I usually work pretty hard to try to make sure I get 2 hours of reading a day. And it's not always easy. That's why they call it the hard work. There are other things that seem more urgent or more important. And I've had to come up with ways because I know how important it is to read and continue learning. But when I'm on the road, it is nothing for me to listen 6 or 7 hours a day, day after day, and I can learn so much. And I really encourage you, that's part of doing the hard work. When you hear that close at the end of the show, those are two things that I'm talking about directly to owner-operators and drivers. Owner-operators on the bookkeeping side, track your numbers, track your fuel mileage, know what all your costs are, know what your profit is, know what your profit per mile is. And you should be looking at that stuff often enough that if I woke you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and asked you some key numbers, you would know them. And you need to keep learning. And that is so easy if you're a driver. Boy, there is just no excuse. Really, for not, you know, I've heard people say, oh, it puts me to sleep. I don't believe that. And if that's the case, it's only because you're not conditioned to it. So start out by listening 15 minutes a day. That's 15 minutes more of a book than you probably read or listened to since you got out of high school. And if you were like me in high school, you didn't read any books then. I read a lot of books in high school. They were just all novels. Just garbage. I didn't read any of my school books. I hated school. I barely made it through. In fact, I think they just kicked me out to get rid of me. Most adults do not read a single book after they leave school. That is a shame. There is so much information out there. It is crazy. You can learn anything you want today. So know your numbers if you're in business. Continue learning, which is super easy if you're a driver. The other one I like to throw out for, you know, my listeners, but really anybody, work harder on your relationships. And, you know, it all comes down to relationships. We don't get through this life alone. And if we do, it's lonely. Work on your relationships. And that's not easy. It's simple. It's not easy. A quick recipe for improving all of your relationships: give more than you take. Really, it's that simple. And people say, well, then everybody will take advantage of me. No, they won't. You can't be taken advantage of if you don't feel like you're being taken advantage of. That's just all in your head. People tell me that all the time. Kevin, you give so much and people just take advantage of it. No, they don't. You can't take advantage of me unless I let you. I want to give. And I find that by giving, my life gets better. So if you're ever wondering what I mean, in the close, do the hard work. That's a quick explanation. But I really encourage you, if that topic interests you, go get the book and listen to it. The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'll get right to your phone calls and questions. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. As promised, I'm going to shoot right over to some phone calls. Let's go to Ohio. Jason, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. How are you doing?
Doing good. What can I help you with today?
First things first, I need a little help finding a good shop here in Columbus, Ohio. Anybody that's listening, I have an electrical issue that I can't find, and I need to get fixed before I get rolling again. Anybody that can
call
that information?
Yeah, I wish I maybe we'll get something for you. I don't know of anybody in Columbus anymore. I used to, but it was 20 plus years ago. So it's been a long time since I've run in that area. But maybe we can get something from somebody.
All right. Now that that's out of the way, Lisa sent you over my business report for March.
Let's look. All right. So we're looking at March here. Looks like you ran just over 10,000 miles. Is that about average?
That's actually above average for me compared to last year. Last year I only did about 106,000 miles total.
Okay. Okay. So $1.85 all miles. Looks like you are leased to a carrier, correct?
Landstar.
Okay. Yeah, so let's go through a couple things here, because I'd like to point this out. You've got a really nice breakdown in profit gauges on your revenue side, so we can really get a good, clear picture of what's going on. So getting $1.40 for the line haul pay, 22 cents a mile on the fuel surcharge, another 4 cents for stop. You're getting 12 cents a mile for your trailer percentage, which is one of the to point out, because it doesn't cost anywhere near that to own and maintain a trailer. So it's, you know, if we look at the numbers at Landstar, now, you know, the idea of, well, some people like the drop and hook. That's a whole different issue. But if we look at the numbers make sense, and you've got a nice breakdown here. So overall, if we throw in a couple little items you've got there, you're at $1.85 a mile, all miles. That is outstanding. Now, what I want to clarify for people, I get people that call me all the time, or I'll see them in truck stops or at the truck show, and they'll say $1.85 a mile, but I make $203 or whatever the number might be. And when I really start to question them, how they come up with the number, it's not accurate. It's not even close. It's like trying to tell me what your fuel mileage is off your IFTA report. the way we do it in profit gauge is it's a good comparison across the board because we do all miles and all revenue. No, we don't guess. We don't, you know, just take paid miles. It's a consistent, because every mile you put on the truck is going to cost you money. So we track them all. So you're doing a very good job of putting your data in. Fixed cost between insurance, tax and license, some rent and lease, 27 cents a mile. If we go down to variable cost, wow, boy, are you doing a fantastic job on fuel cost. You are at 38 cents a mile. That is very, very seldom do we see people get to 40. Now, it's starting to drop down a little bit because fuel cost has been down a while now, but 38 is still outstanding.
My fuel mileage has gone down also with it's actually come back up recently, but I've been pulling a lot of heavy loads in the mountains a lot, and the cold weather is terrible for my truck.
Well, let's think about this, though, and this is why I love the numbers. Your fuel cost, even though you've lost some fuel economy and some runs you're choosing, your fuel cost is 30, but your fuel surcharge is 22. You're only paying 16 cents a mile for fuel. I mean, that is just fantastic. We could go back to, you know, 99-cent fuel, and you wouldn't be doing as good. So, great number. Now, I also see that wages in here. Is that your wage?
Yes, I do have an LLC tax as an S-Corp. That's my wage.
Got it. So what we do then, because now I'm down to the bottom line, is I take your wages and your net revenue, and that's what we add together to see what is left to you. Total profit, wages, distributions, dividends, out of the LLC, and 41 cents a mile for wages, 58 cents a mile net. That looks to me like 99 cents a mile net. That is just fantastic. That means that you are at 53% of every dollar you generate, you keep in your pocket. I used to say 50 was a tough number to get to, and you're at 53 on good revenue. So whatever you're doing, keep doing, because these numbers look fantastic.
All right, I'll keep doing it.
Great stuff. Thanks for calling. Hopefully we find somebody on that electrical issue. They are some of the toughest to track down and troubleshoot, no question. Let's go to North Carolina. Bailey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if you remember a couple weeks ago, you and I were talking about the book Failing Forward.
Yes, I do remember.
I went ahead and listened to it, and I really want to recommend it to listeners.
Uh-oh. Bailey, are you there? Oh, I'm going to put you back on hold and see if we can save that line. I just can't hear you. I will take that recommendation. I might have already ordered it. When we talked about it, I might have put it on. You know, one of the things that I love about the Kindle is that I used to have book lists everywhere. I used to, you know, every time I'd hear about a book, I'd write it down. Sometimes it'd be on a napkin. Sometimes it'd be on a business card in my hand, and I would lose them. And then I'd think, boy, I know there was a book I wanted to get, and I can't remember. Well, because I do love to read so much, I know it sounds a little crazy, but I have three Kindles. And I didn't just buy three all at once. I bought a Kindle way, way back when they first came out. And then a couple years later, when there was an update, I bought another Kindle, but I kept my first one. And then just recently, they made some really nice changes, and I bought a third one. And that's over many years, really. But I kept all three. And so I've got one in the house, one in my backpack. So if I get a book recommendation now, I just grab my Kindle, and I get the sample. I don't have to buy it right away, but I can get the sample and it downloads it. And then it's just sitting there. So I've got probably, not exaggerating, probably 30 books waiting for me on the Kindle. Let's see. Looks like we might have lost that line. So I'm going to head over to Kentucky. Vern, welcome to the program.
Afternoon, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
Okay, well, third week, I'm no longer a sharecropper. I'm running my own iron now.
All right. Congratulations.
Yeah. Finally got that all finished up. I got my name plastered all over the side of my truck, so I guess I have to be a good boy now.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
There you go. And,
great.
Anyway, I'm really enjoying not having the truck payment anymore. What I did was I went ahead and doubled down on my contribution, more than doubled down to my contribution to my emergency fund. So that's saving up for a trailer. And what I wanted to do is ask you about retirement accounts. Now, I'm a sole proprietor and working for myself, so I can't take advantage of the America's Best 401k that Tony Robbins recommends. So where do you think I ought to go with that?
Tell me why you don't think, you know, I haven't done all of the homework on that yet, but I believe you can take advantage of it as a sole proprietor.
I actually called them up and asked them about that, and they said, no, we don't do individual accounts.
Okay, then that is the correct answer, and I didn't realize that because I haven't been there yet. Well, I've been there, I just haven't done any real in-depth research yet. It's going to have to wait till after the CMC. There are several places you can take advantage of a 401k. And what I would recommend you start with is Vanguard. And okay. I haven't checked Vanguard completely yet, but the reason I recommend Vanguard is the once I really figured out the whole fee game. Vanguard has some of the lowest fees possible, and that can really make a difference. So check Vanguard. You know what? I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to come back to you because I don't want to rush this. I'm going to give you a couple other options when we get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to get right back to the phones. I was talking with Vern in Kentucky. So, Vern, there are a couple places I absolutely know you can get an individual 401k, and they also offer the Roth individual 401k, which is the one that I really recommend because it gives us all the options. Now, I do know you can do it at T. Rowe Price, and I do know you can do it at E-Trade. But I would check with Vanguard first.
Okay. I'll go ahead and do that.
And, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, congratulations on doing the hard work in a lot of ways. This is what my open was all about. It's so easy to take the easy way out. A lot of drivers want to be owner operators. I get that. I've never been a company driver. The one thing I've done a lot of things in this industry, but the one thing I haven't done, I was never a company driver. I bought a truck from day one. Actually, I rented one for a little while to get started and then bought one within the first couple months. And I know a lot of drivers want that, but most, and I know this upsets people when I say this, but it's the truth. Most just take the easy way out. they just go sign the lease. They don't do the hard work. And you made the decision to start doing the hard work, and I can see already it's paying off for you.
Oh, you betcha. I started out on the company side, and I'll tell you what, I used to be an engineer. It was right back to feeling like I had a 400-pound monkey on my back, so I had to jump out of that, and it's working out well.
Well, congratulations again. Great stuff. That's what gets me up in the morning. That's what this show is all about. I want to help more people design their own life, not live some life that somebody else is designing for them. Let's go to New York. Brooks, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How's it going?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Yeah, I got a owner-operator selling me a Century, a 1999 Century with a 60-series motor, automatic. I want to know, how wrong can I go with that truck? I haven't seen the truck yet. The transmission is blowing the truck, and the truck can't drive.
Okay, so here's what I would recommend. I've had three auto shifts. I have a very early generation right now, a 99 auto shift. I've had an 01 and I've had an 05. I like the concept. I like the fact it's kind of like cruise control. I use it when it makes sense. When I'm on the level and there's not a lot of shifting going on, I'll put it in auto shift, set the cruise control and be done with it. When I start hitting the hills, cruise comes off, auto shift comes off, and I can drive it manually. When I'm running through the gears in town, many times I'll run it manually. And you get better fuel economy that way. So I like having the option. But I also have to say that after being burnt with an auto shift on repairs and spending almost $20,000 on it and still not being sure if it was fixed or not, I have a hard time recommending them, especially the early generations. So if you're buying this truck cheap enough, I would actually get an estimate on yanking out the auto shift and putting a manual back in it.
Okay. I did that. I got a buddy of mine that could do it for $5,000, and I'm getting the truck for $4,000.
That is a good deal. I like those numbers. $5,000 to pull out an auto shift and put in. And I'm assuming we're talking about at the very least a reconditioned transmission, or is it just a used transmission?
Probably a used one.
Okay. And that's still, I mean, for all the labor, that is still a good price. So, you know, if we can get some history on the transmission, know how many miles are on it, take a look at it before we put it in. I would be good with numbers like this. This is a great way to get a truck. You know, by the time I don't know what the rest of it's like, but it's possible you're going to put another couple thousand into it to get it, you know, on the road and running. But to get a good pre-emission truck on the road under 15,000 is a great way to get started. Now, here's the other thing I'm going to start saying more of. When we look at most of these lease purchase plans, you know, about the minimum payments I see on those things, and it's so bad now they do them by the week. You know, minimum seems to be about $600 a week, $500 or $600 a week. I see guys spending $800 a week. And then when I talk to them about buying an older pre-emission truck, they say, yeah, but I'm just going to have to put so much money into maintenance. Well, you're really not. Compare it to what you're paying for that lease payment, and then it's not as though you pay your lease payment, you never have to put any more money into the truck. They break down all the time. They have lots of maintenance costs. So what if on an older truck, you get it on the road, you start making money, and you put $2,000 a month into it? Big deal. I mean, in 6 months, you've done some serious upgrades and modifications and reconditioning, and if you did it for a year, you'd have a really nice truck.
Okay. I just want to tell you something was nice, though. I'm with a company. I'm into a lease purchase right now. I got a 2012 587 Peterbilt. I just dumped $10,000 into it. After
that's
did
crazy.
That, because of the DPF system, after that, I got to get out.
Yeah, so let's think about that. One repair. Now, the truck was running okay, I assume, and then something
yes.
breaks, and you have to spend $10,000, and all you really get is what you had before. The truck's running okay. But you just spent $9,000, you got a whole truck. Isn't that crazy? Well, good. Congratulations. Again, I love these kind of stories. And let me say this because I get all kinds of hate mail. Yes, I'm beating up on lease purchase programs. I hate them. If you haven't figured out, I hate them for lots of reasons. But if you're in one, don't take it personally. I don't hate you. I don't even hate the fact, well, I kind of hate the fact that you did it, but I don't hate you personally. I have nothing against you. I want to help you if you're listening to show you that there are other ways. Now, some people call me and say, Kevin, I love my lease purchase. If you do, great. Really, and I mean that. Because I don't have all the answers. I just have my way. And I like my way. But if you like your way, then you shouldn't get upset because I have a different way. Let's go to Texas. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Taking my
call.
Can
I help you?
I'm fixing to buy a truck again. I've owned a couple there in the past, off and on since the 90s. And I got about $35,000 cash. And I was wondering what your opinion would be on like transmission, gearing, and what to look for as far as buying a used truck.
Okay, so $35,000 is a great way to get started. No question. That's a nice little bundle of cash, so congratulations on that. Give me a rough idea of what you're looking at as far as how much of that you want to spend and what year of a truck we're talking about.
Well, I'm going to have most of the carriers I've looked at are looking between 7 and 6 years old is the max they'll go.
Okay, so stop right there because I can only give advice that I would take myself. Now, that makes sense, right? You wouldn't want me to give advice that I wouldn't go do, right?
Yes, sir.
I would tell any carrier who said your truck has to be 5 years or newer to go pound salt.
Okay.
And I've told carriers that. I've told the CEOs that, not in that many words, but I used to do a lot of speaking at the fleet level, at TMC meetings, at ATA meetings, and I had a lot of fleet executives and big fleet owners. I mean, big fleet owners in the room, and I would just pound them about this whole 5 year rule that makes no sense to me at all. Now, I also have to say that I was contracted to a carrier for 25 years, and most of that time they had that rule. So that sounds a little disingenuous, but that rule never bothered me until we started getting emission trucks. By the time we got emission trucks, I bought one of them, found out how bad they really were. And then after that, I decided I will only buy gliders. My carrier wants a truck, 5 years old or newer. I like my contract. I'm not going anywhere. So I will buy gliders. So I had another option. I want you to find another option, and I'm going to help you with that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. All right, just a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment, so I'll say all those things that I always say. I'm done. I'm out of here, all that stuff. So don't hang up because we'll come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phones. I'm going to go back to Richard. So, Richard, I'll get to your answer here in just a second, but I want to talk about this for just a bit, because this is what I told the carriers. I would ask them, a whole bunch of these guys in the room, and I would say, somebody explain to me why you have a five-year rule. And they would say, well, you know, we have customers that we care about, and we want trucks stable and safe and look good. And I said, yeah, I get that. That makes tons of sense. But tell me why you have a five-year rule. And they would say, weren't you listening? We want trucks that are dependable, safe, and look good. I heard you the first time. Why are you repeating yourself? Answer the question. Why do you have a five-year rule? And they would get mad. And I would say, come on, guys. You're smarter than this. Tell it on the roof and good looking. And every two-year-old truck and every three-year-old truck and every four-year-old truck and every five, but every six isn't? Really? Are you guys, come on. The year of the truck with trucks that are just ragged, horribly, and always much more now so than they ever used to be. So that argument goes right out the window. So what I would tell them is, I get what you want. You're not getting it with your policy. Can't you see that? Why not just set a policy that says we will only sign on trucks that are dependable, safe, and meet our standards for appearance? Doesn't that seem like a better policy? It actually accomplishes what you are hoping to do. Your five-year rule doesn't. And they would all look at me like, wow, that really makes sense. And then I would check with them a year or two later and nobody changed anything. So I stopped speaking at the fleet level. But you see what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So for me, you know, I like I say, I was with the carrier for 25 years that had that rule. I understand now they've actually changed it. But had I been looking for a carrier, then I probably would have skipped over any carrier with that. That rule, or I would have bought a glider, either a new glider if I had the budget and the numbers made sense, or I would look hard to find a used glider. Now that option.
What would Kevin do with?
What's that?
What would Kevin do with five?
That's
as far as going.
That's a good answer, because finding, obviously we can't buy a new glider. Finding a used glider. 35 might be tough. I might work on it for a while. It might be, you know, part of my strategy to look to see if I could find one. But what I would be doing is exactly driving right now. I would have a late 90s, early 2000 Volvo would be my first choice with a Detroit. And you know, honestly, I'm starting to get a I have my first choice, which is the Detroit. Depending on the operation, and I'll ask you a little bit more about that in a second. Well, you don't know what it is yet. So I'm glad you're... Now, hold on. I'm going to come back to that point. So okay. I would probably have a 13-speed, again, depending on the operation. I wouldn't really care about the gears when I bought it. If I could find it with 370s or 390s, that would be my first choice because I like to run really slow. If it had 355s, I'd live with it and run in 12th gear until I got to the point in my fuel plan where I would get the exact gears that I wanted, which would probably be 279s. You're not going to find it on the used market, so it's not a big enough deal to worry about. My second choice, it would be, and these are really tough to find, but they're out there, would be a PACCAR product, Kenworth or a Peterbilt with those same specs. Actually, it would be my second choice, and they're a little harder to find. Third choice, which is probably the easiest to find, would be a late 90s, early 2000 FLD with the same specs. Now, transmission, depending on the operation, if you were going to run fairly local or you were going to spend a lot of time in the south, either southeast or southwest, or you were going to be light, I'd be very, very happy with a 10-speed. If going to be in an operation that was a lot more over the road and I might be out west more or in the New England, Pennsylvania area where I'm going to be doing a lot of climbing, then the 13-speed is worth.
Okay. And we're right on the same line here. Those are my thoughts, and you're pretty much right in line. Okay, what about the money? Should I have the money running through a business account and pay myself, or should I just run it through my personal account? In the past, I've always just run the money through my personal account. Which is better?
You know, there are a lot of people that would disagree with me on this. Things simple. There is no right or wrong answer to this. Some people say if it's a business, you better have a business account. Well, it's nice, but it's not absolutely necessary. I know lots of people who run a sole proprietorship out of one account. What I would highly recommend is that you have very good accounting so that you're not mixing the amount, but in your bookkeeping, we always want to know what was spent for the business, what was spent personally, and we want to keep those separate. Now, I will say that in today's world of technology, having two separate accounts will make your accounting much easier. Not it'll make it much easier because if you use Mint, that I've recommended many times, Mint.com, it's free. Mint.com will virtually download all of your transactions every time you open the program and do a really good job of categorizing them for you. You don't have to do a whole lot of work. And if it's mixed, then the accounting in Mint even becomes more difficult. But in Mint, I could have one person that would download and categorize. I could have a business account. It would download and categorize. I could have a personal credit card. It would do that for a business credit card. And then using profit gauges, it's going to be very easy. 20 or 30 minutes a month, you're going to have great reports and you're not going to put much work in.
Awesome. And I'm really looking forward to getting signed up with y'all and using y'all's system that y'all have in there. It looks.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You will love it. The report I went over earlier, that having access to those kind of numbers to me is just critical. You have to. I just wonder, I have always wondered very early on in my career, and I wasn't all that smart. I made a lot of mistakes. But early on in business, I was fortunate enough to figure out how important the numbers really were. Let's go to Minnesota. Steve, welcome to the program. Steve, are you with me? Minnesota. Steve, going once. No, Steve, I'll put you back on hold. Maybe I'll try to make it back. I'm not sure what happened there. Let's go to Mississippi to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I've got an oil sample I would like you to take a look at.
Okay, this is going to be quick. You ready?
Yes, sir.
It's perfect. We could go a little more in depth, though. It's actually, you know, it's a zero on the scale. The scale runs 0 through 4. 0 and 1 are considered completely normal. 2 and 3 are considered abnormal, but we don't do anything about an abnormal sample other than watch it. It's not hurting anything. It's just it tells us we need to keep an eye on things. 4 is what they call critical. And with a 4, we always change the oil and then try to solve the problem. So really, no fuel dilution to speak of. Soot is less than 0.1. Viscosity, 1540 is right. Base is holding up. No wear metals, no dirt, no signs of coolant. Nothing to talk about. This is just a great sample. And it looks to me like you've got about almost 21,000 miles on that oil. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. This is an XX. What year is this?
It's 2011.
Has it been fixed in any way?
No, sir, it has not. I leased it going on 9 months ago now, and I've put 70,000 miles on it, a little over 70,000 miles, and the only thing I've done to it is put an injector in it.
You have got one of those 40% that I talk about, the good new trucks with no problems. This is a keeper for right now. So I nothing else to talk about. Great oil school. Keep doing what you're doing. I am all out of time. I've got to get out of here. I will be, I'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do that hard work I talked about. And master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're jump right back into another hour. Let me, I will say that we have room for questions. We have a lot of callers on the line, but not many questions right now. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all you want to talk about, press one, and I would do it quick because it's filling up now. So here we go. We're going to get, you know what? Give me 30 seconds. I need to check a recording real quick. Make sure I got something right. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs. Back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show, well, it's about the business of trucking. It's all about trucking, primarily about business. But we really cover anything trucking related. Trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started in the business, buying your first truck, getting your own authority, working with brokers. You will cover it here on the air. All you have to do is call and ask the question. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We can even talk about the lifestyle of trucking. Very, very different. Most people don't understand the challenges of living on the road. I do. I spent 1,000,000 miles on the road driving commercially to make money, and I still, after almost 30 years of this, I still like to spend about 4 months out of the year on the road in a truck. My trailer's a little different than yours. It isn't full of freight. It's got some studio equipment in it and a lot of technology, and allows Lisa and I to live and work on the road. But, you know, very, very similar circumstances. I'm about the same length as most trucks on the road. I'm about the same weight as a empty truck and trailer. And I'm still doing the same things. When I'm going to get fuel, where I'm going to park for the night, how I'm going to stay healthy and make money and get work done. Very, very similar. So I know what you're going through, and I'd like to help if I could. Give me a call. And speaking of calls, we're just going to jump right to the phone calls tonight. I'm going to get started in North Carolina. Bailey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. On the last show, I got disconnected, but I was talking to you about the book Failing Forward that I told you I was going to listen to. And I also finished the one that you recommended, which was Chasing the Scream.
Yes. Yeah.
And so exceptional book. Both
crazy.
Of them, actually.
Well, I've got, I double checked because, like I say, I always have a Kindle handy. I'm going to make sure I listen to that one. I've got a huge list on my Kindle, but I'm going to make sure I listen to Failing
Yeah, it's only 3 hours, so I mean it's definitely worth the listen.
Oh yeah, I can knock that out. That's a half day. Can't beat
exactly. I knocked it out. I think just rolling from Arizona into New Mexico, and it was it the one point that it made in it. And I don't know if you're a sports fan or not, but it made a comparison to look at Tony Gwynn. He's one of the greatest, most prolific hitters of all time. He had over 3,000 hits in his career. Now, if you had judged him instead of his hits, but judged him by the number of outs and strikeouts, which was well over 6,000. I mean, you would have considered him a failure, but the man was one of the greatest hitters of all time. Babe Ruth is another example, hit over 700 home runs, but he still leads the majors with the most strikeouts. And the book talks about how using failure is a stepping stone to doing, you know, the next right thing.
Yeah, you know, and it is a very, very difficult concept for a lot of people. And, you know, I feel fortunate that I wasn't criticized a lot. And I think criticism, especially of children, is what sets us up for a life where we are so afraid to fail that we never really get to accomplish much. And I think that's the biggest. People are just afraid of what's, you know, they're afraid of being criticized. Oh. Yeah, fails, so they do the nothing instead. And it's really sad. I mean, one of the two things that really helped me a lot. One was being able to say I'm wrong. I'm wrong.
Exactly.
I thought I was right. I had good intentions, but not new information, and I was wrong. And that is liberating. And then being able to say,
it is.
Hey, you know what? So let me read this real quick, because this person obviously is a real failure at the stats. Basketball player missed 9,000 shots in his career, 9 times. And this is what he does for a living. And he gets paid lots of money. But 9,000 times he missed the shot, lost 300 games, 26 times he was trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. Failed over and over and over, and that's why I succeed. Michael Jordan.
That sounds like MJ. It funny thing about like the failing forward thing. You remember back in November when I called you asking your advice on finding a mortgage broker that would deal with a truck driver?
Yes, I do.
You and I talked about it over the course of several calls. I had to call between, you know, getting numbers from my realtor and doing the hard work on my own. I ended up finding somebody and we closed on May 4th, but I can't tell you how many phone calls I ended up having to make, how many people I had to sit and interview.
You don't have to tell me. We did that years ago. And I told you that we did it years ago. It, you know, when we were working with clients on this kind of stuff, but let me tell you what's happened since that time, because 15 years ago, almost when I was doing 10 that I was doing that. And since that time, lots of people have called me and asked the same question. You know, I'm an owner operator. I really want to buy a house. Nobody will give me a mortgage. They don't understand. And I'd say, I know they don't understand. Them understand. Well, I tried. Well, try some more. Well, you don't understand. I've made phone calls and nobody will do it. And finally, I have to just say, okay, you know, what else am I going to say? You have to keep trying. Well, you did.
Exactly.
You kept trying and you succeeded.
I had to go and find somebody that was that wanted my business bad enough that they were willing to sit and listen to my situation. I found that. And it was an example of failing forward, because I think once when I called you, I was absolutely discouraged. And you said to me, just keep calling. You'll find somebody. And it worked.
Yeah. And, you know, some people think 3 calls is a lot of work. And, you know, it comes back to that whole thing. It's kind of like, you know, we don't like to be criticized. We also don't like to be told no. And that's why most people really can't make it in sales. because in sales, you just get told no over and over and over and over. And for a lot of people, being told no three times was too much. And I say three times, then we're not even in the game yet. You know, when you get to 10, we're just starting the warm-up phase. And how many...
There's people that say you don't get a yes until you've gotten at least 15 no's from that person.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are all kinds of rules in sales like that, that, you know, 10 is nothing. What if, and people say, well, how many do I have to go to? I don't know the number. You have to go to them until somebody says yes. I don't know what that number is. But why quit?
You know, I today, my comparison, you know, for success and failure, I look back to, you know, I look back to about six and a half years ago. You know, I was living on the street. I was hopelessly addicted to drugs. And today I have an incredible living, an incredible relationship with my kid, with my family. The house that I just bought, was the point to me buying it was to be close to my my parents, who were getting, you know, getting up there into their 80s. And, you know, and it was just, you know, if I had just listened to when people told me no, or I was never going to amount to anything, or that there's no coming back from anything, you know, I would be dead right now, or in prison, or, you know, some combination thereof. And, you know, my life is amazing today because I learned how to not accept failure.
I am so in awe. I am just so awed by stories like that. And I, you know, I look at my life and I think, my God, you've had it easy. And I didn't grow up rich by any stretch of the imagination. You know, my father was a truck driver, so, you know, but neither one of my parents finished high school. I barely, but I had a very, very comfortable childhood. I was never hungry. My parents were very loving. I just remember mostly good times growing up. Since I've been an adult, I've had my ups and downs. You know, I got myself in crazy amount of yawn, screwed up a couple businesses. But honestly, I mean, I've never been in danger of, you know, not having a place to sleep or not having food. I've never even been close to that. And I think I've been so fortunate and I've had it so easy. And I'm just awed by people with stories like yours that come from those kind of circumstances and turn it around. Again, congratulations. And thanks for the book recommendation. I am going to check that out. The music's playing. I've got to get to a break. We will be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to Texas. Colin, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I have a couple questions. I got a 2002 FLD, and we lost an injector the other day in Hayburn, Idaho. On a Saturday, it got towed into the shop. The driver told the mechanic what was wrong with it. They did a whole bunch of work that was not asked to be done. But going back to the injector question, when they finally decided that was the problem, after checking the ECM, replacing the fuel pump, etc., they found out that the tip of one of the injectors had blown off, and one of the other injectors had a broken return spring. Now, the guy driving the truck had neglected to get oil samples the last two times that the oil was changed. Would we have seen the diesel in the oil for the return spring?
Possibly. But maybe another thing. You know, and I'm not defending the driver. If your policy is get oil samples, then he should be getting oil samples. And you know, I'm a huge proponent of oil samples.
Correct.
Even had he gotten the oil samples, we very well could have missed this. And had he gotten the first sample, and there would have been maybe a little bit of fuel dilution, I would have said, let's just wait and see, because of all the problems around with injectors. We go in with a little bit of fuel dilution. We spend a bunch of money. So I've been much more cautious about just waiting. And we might not have seen this at all. The tip, we probably would have never known. The spring, maybe. I love oil analysis, no question. I do it every time. I recommend it. But it doesn't solve everything. After issues, I'm really recommending the FAS. The FAS fuel system, this truck, does it have one by chance?
It doesn't. And when I was at Mid-America, I talked to them over there. And they actually have two different size FASs. And so I think it was only $100 different to go from the smaller one to the larger one. On a regular 60 series, would you recommend going with the larger one, the extra $100?
I do. Yeah, I always go with the larger one, and it's usually a horsepower thing, but I go with the larger one because, like you say, it's not that much more money. And that blown off tip very well could have been air in the, and we know there's air in the fuel. There's air in the fuel on every truck. It's part of the design, but it's not good. And,
right.
You know, the leaner the fuel gets as far as, you know, low sulfur, the tighter the tolerances get, which is a good thing. But there's also a downside. When you get air, a pressure injectors with tight tolerances, it's like a welding torch. I mean, you are putting oxygen through that thing at extremely pressure. Yeah, these kind of failures of the injectors, and the FAST will really help slow that down and eliminate it in most cases.
Now, somebody also said that a drop of water could blow a tip. Is that correct?
It's certainly not good. The only thing we want going through that injector is pure fuel. And that's why the FAS is so beneficial, because it literally, the term they use, and I love this term, describes what's happening. The FAS system polishes the fuel. It gets it clean, really clean. It gets the dirt out. It gets the water out. And most importantly, there aren't really any other filters on the market that get the air out. So the whole package, we're delivering polished fuel through that injector.
Now, let me ask you another question. Is there a way, because I called the other day on a VD12 that I think's got fuel pump issues or fuel line issues. If we put the FAS on the truck, is there a way of measuring the pressure coming out of there so we can tell if we've got a collapsing fuel line or anything like that?
Yeah, there are a couple ways. I mean, we can put, you know, we can test fuel pressure on a dyno, possibly hook up a gauge. You can put gauges inside the cab that would allow you to monitor fuel pressure all the time. Really just depends on how much you want to invest. Is it something you just want to use for troubleshooting one time, which isn't, can be done at any good shop? Or is it something you want to know all fuel pressure, that kind of thing? And I will say, I don't use the FAS or any of our products to cover up a maintenance issue. And I understand that's not what you're asking, but I just want to be clear that if we had a fuel pump or a collapsing line, The fast may make up for some of that, but that's not what we would want to do. We would want to fix the problem first. And I know you're trying to troubleshoot the problem. So I would say find a good shop. They should be for you. And then the fast is there for all the benefits of the fast. Let's go to South Carolina. Stan, welcome to the program.
How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I may be doing all this backwards, but I've been just a company driver for 38 years.
Let me correct something, because I hear people say this, and it always bugs me a little bit. I like when people say, I'm a company driver, I've been a company driver. One word can change a sentence dramatically. And let me give you another example before I give this one. People will say about me all the time, Kevin only does it for the money. Well, all you have to do is take one word out of that sentence and it would be true. Kevin does it for the money. Of course I do. I mean, that's why most of us get up and go to work. For the money. If the check wasn't there at the end of the week, most of us wouldn't show up. But when you put in the word only, changes the entire sentence. No, I don't only do this for the money. There are thousands of other reasons why I do this. I love helping people. I could go on and on. You put one word in that changed everything. I'm just a company driver.
Okay. I'm a company driver.
There you go. I like that one.
And about 4 years ago, I bought I actually got a truck gave to me. So I've been working on it just when I had extra money. And I'm actually fixing to crank it up this weekend. And I want to try to get it leased on to Landstar. And I'm going to retire driving that truck around wherever I want to go. And I'm going to get a trailer before I do try to lease home with them. Now on the OPS, would you put it on before you try to break it in or after the break in? And how long should I break it in before I change it over to synthetic?
Good question. All good questions. And a lot of people get confused about this. The OPS is one of those products that there is never a wrong time to put it on. People will say, I've got an engine with 1.2 million miles. I'll wait until I do the in-frame to put the OPS on. Well, you can wait, but there's nothing wrong with putting it on right now. Clean oil. There's never a bad time to have clean oil. So the only real consideration is, does it work in your budget? I mean, if it works in the budget, put it on before you even crank the thing up. There's no reason not to. The sooner we start cleaning that oil, the better it is. So that takes care of when to do the OPS. There's never a bad time. Now, the break.
I already have the system. I just didn't know when to put it on.
I'd put it on before I crank it up the first time. Now, I would put in whatever standard oil you want for the first crank up, Rotella, whatever you like, and I would leave it in for no more than 5,000 miles. And at 5,000 miles, that oil would come out. I would change the OPS filters. I would change, and I would put synthetic in right then.
Okay. Would you use a full synthetic or a synthetic blend?
Either one. And the reason that I say that is, you know, the 15 synthetics or the 540 synthetics, we can go full synthetic on those. If you decide you want to go with a 30 weight oil, which a lot of people are doing today, and it seems to be working well, the 30 weight synthetics are blends. There are a couple full synthetics, even in a 30 weight. I'm okay with any of them. A 40 weight full synthetic, a 40 weight blend, 30 weight full synthetic, 30 weight blend. I've been trying for years to come up with what I think is the best oil, and I can't. And I've said it 100 times. how to prove that one oil is absolutely better than another. If I could, I would figure out what the best oil is, and that would be what I would recommend. But I don't have one that I can prove is better than any other one. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to move on to another call, but Stan, congratulations. I love your plan. You know, you got a truck. You didn't get impatient. You put some money into it while it was working. You're going to have a great truck to put on the road, I'm sure. You're going to lease the Landstar. What a great way to retire. So congratulations on that. Let's go to Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I just got done listening to a couple of books that you recommended. You know, Grow a Pear, Atlas Shrugged. Really enjoying those.
Wow. You've done some heavy-duty listening there, then.
Yeah, Atlas Shrugged, that took me 3 weeks because, you know, I listen to it for a couple hours, then I get interrupted by a phone call. But really an interesting concept on that book.
You know, for the people who haven't listened to Atlas Shrugged, if you understand coming from, it in my opinion, it gives her a lot of credibility. In communist Russia, she got to see the communist system. She was able to emigrate to the U.S. and she's adult life here. But she wrote that book in the 50s. And a lot of people read it today and say, oh my God, she was, she could tell the future, because we can look around and a lot of that's
getting scary. I might be losing you, Kevin. So, it's a really nice book, and thank you very much for the recommendation.
You are welcome. And what'd you think of Grow a Pair?
Ew, intense.
Yeah,
Really makes you think.
Is that the only Larry Winget book you've read?
I've read They're Your Kids and It's Your Own Damn Fault, or the children's book.
Yep.
Kids.
Your Kids are Your Own Damn Fault.
Very intense one, and I really enjoy his books. I'm planning on reading some more, but I'm waiting around for credits.
Yeah, no, I know how that goes. So I have to say that Grow a Pair is a really, really important message. It really is. There's no question about it. We need more of that today. But if I had to rate his books, and I wouldn't put that up as one of my favorites. I love the message for some reason, and it might have just been when I was trying to read three or four books all at the same time, and I've given up that. I don't do that anymore. So I may go back and reread it, but I have the feedback. Absolutely. I love the fact that you're enjoying books. As a driver, I've said it 1,000 times. I can't imagine why not listening to audiobooks all the time. Let's go to Kansas. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you today?
Doing wonderful. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just telling Lisa that I listened to a couple good books recently that I'd like to just, mention. One is Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, and that is such an awesome book.
Well, let me jump in there before you move on to the others. I just read about Benjamin Franklin again. I don't remember where I saw it. But I got thinking, I read his stuff, God, when I was in like my early 20s. And then when I saw some mention of it the other day, I thought, I really need reread those. He was an amazing man.
Absolutely amazing. And I guess there's a couple versions of his autobiography. One was done by his grandson, and his grandson, who had the right to publish it, thought a lot of his comments were common and vulgar, so he changed it to make it sound better. But when someone found his original manuscript, they go, oh, this is so much better.
Oh, yeah.
And
remember what I read for sure, but I know I read a lot of his material in my 20s. It had a big impact. I have a feeling it would have a bigger impact now if I read it again.
It's helped me. You know, it's just like, I think a lot of the things you have and you talk about, he also endorses 100%. And, you know, don't give up. He was very argumentative as a young man. And one of his Quaker friends said, you know, that's not really a good thing. You'd be a lot better off if you were a little more, appeared more humble anyway. And he changed that. And it was one of the reasons he became such a great statesman, is because he wouldn't ever say, certainly. He said, it appears to be. And so when he had a different point of view with other people, he never built a wall.
That's a great lesson.
Win them over later. But the other book is called Wake Up and Live. It was written by Dorothea Brand. And that talks about getting over the fear of failure, which again is one of the topics you've been talking about. And the subtitle is, what would you do if you knew it was impossible to fail?
You know,
awesome book.
You have picked a couple of real winners, and they are like a blast for me. My God, I forgot all about Dorothea Brand. Again, I listened to an audio program by her in my early 20s. And if I would have sat down and tried to read the 10 most influential authors or people I can remember, I probably would have forgotten her, and it would have been a shame, because that was a great program.
Well, probably. You know, listening to that book and Benjamin Franklin's, it's like, I wish I'd listened to those when I was in my 20s, you know, 35 years ago. But hey, it's never too late to change.
Never. And here's the other thing. Like I said, I have both of those people and their writings had a huge impact on me in my 20s. But I look back and think, what was wrong with you? You learned this stuff back then. You listened to it. You should have better. I mean, that's sometimes. And now I know, if I were to go back and listen to that, I think it would have a bigger impact on me now that I am more mature and I'm hopefully a little more humble and a little more open to things. And I used to say, there's no time to go back and listen to something twice or read something twice. There's too many other books. But finding is that there are some real classics. And honestly, there's some garbage on the market, just horrible stuff that I'm surprised even makes it to print. And a lot of times now I'm going back and re-listening to the stuff that I know was really good, and it's having more of an impact now.
Yeah. I just want to say thank you, Kevin, for what you do. I just bought your program. I'll get home in a couple weeks to look at it. You know, it'll beat me home. But I am excited. I've driven for 22 months. I had a week where everything went wrong. I made poor choices. I got stuck and had to have a wrecker pull me out. I tore a door off a trailer because I got in a hurry trying to get out of someone's way. And then I had an overweight ticket. Tandem slid on me.
Yeah.
but
one of those weeks.
And financially, it's hurt because I got dinged for $500. The wait ticket was $695. But I want to be an owner operator. And I thought, you know, I'm at least making something even after the money's taken out. And if I'm an owner operator, be entirely mine. My driver manager, the assistant sat down, well, on the phone, said, you know, you make mistakes, learn from them, but don't beat yourself up over the head about them. Move on, don't do them again. And
great advice. It really is. You will be an owner operator, and you will be a good one. I'm sure of it. And so many good lessons there. And speaking of really influential people, one of the books that I've never forgotten, I recommend it all the time, The 7 Habits, absolutely one of my favorite books. And now I am rereading The 8th Habit. If you've ever read The 7 Habits and you like it, go get The 8th Habit. Now, not one more habit. It is an entirely different way of life. It's a very, very long book, even though, you know, there were 7 habits in the other one. This is a new way of life. But he is a great author, and I'm going to have a little bit more to say about that right after this break, and then I'll get to more of your calls. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. The website is letstruck.com. The phone number for us, if you need any help with anything, whether it's, you know, how to get started in the business, how to buy your first book, started on your bookkeeping, help with your taxes, whatever it might be, give us a call of what we refer to as our Tribe Care team. They're there to help. Now, it's very possible you'll get voicemail. They're busy, but we return every call. So if you don't get through on the first time, keep trying. Leave us a message. We will get back to you. And I'm going to grab something to write with. 855-800-FUEL. 100-3835. Again, whatever it might be, give us a call. We will help you out. Now, I want to go back and talk about a little bit of the 8th Habit, but more about Stephen Covey. If you haven't listened to the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, you really need to. If you've listened to it and you liked it, the 8th Habit book, it really is an entirely new, in his terms, an entirely new paradigm. And I'm stalling a little bit. I was trying to remember how he phrases this because it really helps me a lot. He talks about the in between and response, and I might not get the exact words right, but what he's talking about is that things happen to us all the time, every minute of every day. And there's a gap in between the thing that happens to us and our response. And if you can make that gap bigger, you will make better decisions and everything will change. It seems like such a simple concept, but far too many people are very reactive and very quick to react. And what reminded me of this was the caller saying he had one of those weeks, and I've had them. We've all had them. I'm getting a little better as I mature, get older, however you want to say it, slowing some of those down that they don't compound. So, yes, it'll happen. No question. I'm getting better seeing what's happening, taking more time, not reacting so quickly, and building more space in between the stimulus and my response. And what you find is that once you start doing that, you start decisions and you stop compounding some of those problems. Now, it's worse situations. I remember my first year of driving, I had some horrible times like that. But if you can learn this skill of widening that gap between what happens to you and how you respond to it, you will find that you make better decisions and you don't compound as much. Let's go to Michigan program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing? I got an oil sample, but before I get to the oil sample, it's the second time I've heard you talk about touch advocate mortgages, trying to get mortgages. And
yes,
there's a national company that is a guy started to help people. It's called NACA, N-A-C-A, National Assistance Corporation of America. And they help you get a mortgage. In fact, they will give you a mortgage. But they're like you. You must do some work. They make you do
good
a budget. They make you do a budget. And they'll help you do the budget. They don't care about your credit score. They care that you pay your bills on time. And
excellent,
if you show that over time, if you've been doing that, they'll give you a mortgage. No money down. That's the interest rate. Patient.
Okay.
I've you used them. My friends use them. So you might want to lift them up. NACA.com.
And as soon as I type that into Google, it's NACA mortgage, and it looks like it's NACA.com. Fantastic. I will, I'm going to bookmark this right now. I'm going to do a little research. And
yeah, they're a great organization. They help people save their homes too. They're going to just as about $35 years. So, and it's a really known secret. Nobody talks about
that. Well, I'm talking about it a lot more, so I appreciate the heads up. Let's get to this oil sample. All right, so it's a level 4. As, you know, I was explaining earlier, is critical, but your level 4 isn't really all that bad. Have we talked about this before?
We have talked about this truck before. This is the first time I got a level 4.
Yeah, so this is kind of an odd sample here. You're using a mobile Delvac 30 weight. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a blend.
All right. It's been in there 34,000 miles, but for some reason, it seems to oxidize the oil a lot. Now,
yes,
it's also possible there are a couple brands of oil, and I have a feeling that's what's going on here. There are a couple brands of oil that, because of one of the additives they use, they show really high oxidation when it's really not oxidized. And I have to believe that's what's going on here, because we've got a little bit of fuel dilution, nothing I would even worry about. The viscosity up a little bit again, nothing to get too worried about. Got a little bit of elevated iron. You know, here's what I'm going to recommend you do on this one. This one's kind of borderline, and I don't want to make the call on. If I had to make a call, I would probably tell you to change the oil, but I know we did that once before. See, I think this is one of those brands that just shows high oxidation. Have you ever talked to Tom Bach over at OPS?
Yes. Yeah, Tom and I talked a little bit. And he thinks that the brand is oil, too.
Okay. Okay, and that's really what I wanted. I wanted a second opinion on that, and Tom is the guy that I would go to. So if Tom said the same thing, then there's really nothing wrong here. This shouldn't be a four. It should be a two. And at a two, we just keep an eye on things. I mean, there's nothing here that would cause any concern. Your soot is really low, which is a good sign. And everything else looks good. So I would just keep running this and just get used to the fact that you have psychedelic oil samples.
Okay. It's just scary when I tell it.
Yeah, I know. It's a little concerning when you first look at it until you start digging down into it. And then you think, yeah, this is just one of those weird brands. So, but there's nothing in this oil that is causing any damage whatsoever. And there's nothing. And honestly, it's telling us that the engine's running good.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for all you do for
us. You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Louisiana. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. What can I help you with today?
Well, this first-time caller, and I hope you hear from me more in the future. I've been driving 18 years, 16 as a company. I leased one with a company to get a lease purchase. I know you're down on the lease purchase, but I really think this was God sent for me.
Good.
I just want to run a couple numbers by you. I got, I believe I'm going to pay it off probably Monday or Tuesday, first of next week.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
And, yeah, thank you very much. My wife, well, I paid so much money doing this that my wife retired and she rides with me. And it's been a real blessing. But my miles I turned in 2014, I turned 156,693 solo. My revenue on this was $221,688. And before I get to the next number, you got to understand, I didn't catch you all the time, and the things that you've said, I've really tried to put it in and enforce in the way I drive. I drove like I stole it when I first got it.
Right.
And, and now I understand that you was telling us that every mile per hour is a tenth of a gallon saved. And
yep.
I have really dropped from 70. I dropped it down to 65. And,
excellent.
And it, you know, I really slowed down to where it hurt my teeth to watch everybody pass me. I've gotten to the point when a school bus goes by, I just learned to blow the horn at the kids and wave and just keep grinning.
That's right.
I know you drive, I see you're telling us that you're on the road right now and you drive about 57, 58. I drive.
58 is speeding for me.
I drive 55. If I'm empty and I got plenty of time, I drive 53.
That's excellent.
I don't want to lug it. I want to get the most I can out of everything I do.
What transmission?
It's a 9-speed.
Okay.
But it's the Freightliner Columbia 2005 Troy 60 Series Detroit in it. I was getting 5.5 when I drove it like I stole it, and I'm in the upper 6, sometimes 7. Like 7.3, 7.4, I think the best I've gotten out of it. I really want to get with your program because I don't know everything. I like to say I do, but I don't. I ain't going to sit here and tell nobody no lies. I put in my pocket last year $68,847. But
congratulations.
Keep in mind,
for two things. One, knowing the number, and two, doing really well.
Okay, would you tell me if I've done well? Payments was $400 a week for 106 weeks. My maintenance was high. They do a high maintenance being an older vehicle, and I understand that. It was 12 cents a mile, and
you know,
put in a lot of miles.
And in today's world, and the music's playing, so I'm going to have to wrap this up. In today's world, on an 05, which is an emission truck, 12 cents is not bad. That tells me you're doing a lot of things right. You know, I use 6 and 7 cents a mile. It's still possible, but it's getting harder and harder. Most people doing that nowadays are doing a lot of their own maintenance themselves. So we're adjusting those numbers up. And on the emission trucks, you're just going to spend that kind of money. That's 12 cents is not bad. I know people in the 20s. So you're doing great. Keep doing what you love hearing. As much as I don't like leases, I love hearing lease success stories. There's just not enough of them. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work. And master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.